Broadcasting in English.
Welcome to Radio Prague Weekend Programming with me, Jan Bellinger. In today's show, a new edition of Mailbox, our program in which we respond to questions and comments from our listeners. This time around, we will also announce the winner of last month's mystery competition. That'll be followed by checkbooks and our serialized reading of the memoirs of Yaroslava Sklenichkova, a survivor of the Lygice tragedy. And finally, stay with us for another edition of From the Archives. First off, though, let's get straight to your comments in our popular program Mailbox, hosted as always by Pavla Horakova.
Hello and welcome to Mailbox. Today is the day when we announce the name of the lucky winner of last month's listeners' quiz, but first up we have some reactions to our programs. Sandeep Chawale from India responds to a recent series of Czech books produced by David Vaughan.
The interview with the nurse and her feelings about the fear was quite amazing. It is simply great that Radio Prague broadcasts such recordings. Yaroslava Sklenichkova's moving memoirs, If I Had Been a Boy, I Would Have Been Shot, reflect how horrifying were the days faced by the Czech people under Nazi rule.
David Eldridge from the United Kingdom returns to the recent baby box controversy.
Each time I hear of the Czech Republic's baby box scheme, I think of an incident that took place here in the UK near to where I live. A newborn baby was taken to the steps of a clinic wrapped in a warm blanket and left with a note requesting that the baby please be looked after. Unfortunately, the path by the clinic was also used for access to a parking lot, and a vehicle passed the clinic and ran over the bundle, thinking it to be trash. The crushed baby was found later. The authorities classified the incident as being, quote, unfortunate. Baby boxes are illegal here in the UK. I always think of that baby when the subject of baby boxes arises, and how much better it would have been if a nice warm box could have been available for the child.
Mary Lou Krennick from Texas responds to another topic.
It disturbed me to read that the Czech Republic is jeopardizing its commitment to the NATO alliance by reducing its military spending. Everyone seems to be finding ways to cut spending these days to heal public finances. We cannot forget the painstaking steps it took for the Czech Republic to finally become a member of the NATO.
John Brewer from the Czech Republic wrote,
thanks for helping us expats learn more about Czech life and so on. I really enjoy reading your articles online, but I wish you had an area for comments.
As for now, you can comment on Radio Prague's articles on our Facebook page. Our internet department tells me that a similar application is being considered for radio.cz in the future. Li Ming from China was one of the first to wish Radio Prague a happy 75th birthday.
It gives me great pleasure to applaud Radio Prague on reaching this milestone. August 31st, 2011 is an important day for Radio Prague, for it has been 75 years since the start of its broadcasting. To a human, 75 years is a very long time in life, and it is also the same to a radio station. I'm quite sure the next 75 years will bring more development and even greater achievements for Radio Prague. I hope you have a well-deserved and enjoyable 75th anniversary celebration.
Thank you very much, and you can look forward to special programs dedicated to the anniversary. Now on to our July mystery lady. Chan Chuang Meng from China wrote,
Edith Templeton was born in Prague in 1916 and spent much of her childhood in a castle in the Bohemian countryside. She left Prague in 1938 to marry an Englishman. She lived in various parts of Europe and made her final home in Bordighera on the northwest coast of Italy. Edith Templeton died in June 2006. She also wrote under the pseudonym Louise Walbrook.
Raghu Arumugam from India wrote,
every word of it is true was the title of a Czech books program on Edith Templeton by David Vaughan and Bernie Higgins on Radio Prague, which went on the air 13th of August 2006. I would have missed a lot from English literature if Radio Prague had not asked this kind of question. Thanks, Radio Prague.
Hans-Werner Lollicke from Denmark writes,
Prague again proves to be a cosmopolitan world city, being home to people who spend their life all over the world. In many cases, wars made people leave, but this month's novelist had love as the reason to leave the city when she, as a 22-year-old, went for marriage in England.
Jayanta Chakrabarti from India wrote,
Edith Templeton is perhaps the most assertive and adventurous Czech novelist, whose works reflect a unique style and enigmatic sentiment. Writing under the pseudonym Louise Walbrook, her 1966 Gordon sent shockwaves across the world, allegedly for its indecency and portrayal of women as victims of humiliation and insensitivity. However, the novel is a serious study of a confused and dislocated Europe in the aftermath of the war. Herself a widely traveled writer, her seminal 1950 travelogue, The Surprise of Cremona, describes her adventures and explorations of northern Italian exotic towns like Cremona and Parma. We in India are proud to be associated with this great Czech soul as she spent a part of her hectic life in this country with her husband, Dr. Edmund Ronald, a renowned cardiologist and physician to the royal family of Nepal. While living in India, she met prominent personalities like Nehru and the Dalai Lama. This great Czech soul occupies a significant place in the history of women's writing.
Mary Lou Krennick from Texas writes,
Our mystery person for July is Edith Templeton. She was featured in a Prague radio article in August 2006. She is best known for being an author associated with scandal due to the degree of sexual explicitness in many of her works.
Colin Law from New Zealand wrote,
Edith Paserova was born into the wealthy Paser family, who not only owned the 14th-century castle Yirni, about 5 kilometers from Prague, but also had extensive property in the region. Some of her early childhood years were spent living in Vienna with her mother, but they returned to Prague where Edith studied at the French Lycée. Her summer holidays were spent at the castle, and she is quoted from a letter as saying, When you got off the train at the station in Chelakovice, everything belonged to us, everything to God knows where. The first Edith Paserova story was published in the Prager Tagblatt when she was only 10 years old. After graduating from high school, Edith studied medicine at Prague University. In 1938, to escaping the impending German occupation of Bohemia, she moved to England, and she married William Stockwell.
Charles Konesny from the United States wrote,
This lady got around, and one has to say she lived an interesting life. Raised in a castle, good education, and then off to see the world. And along the way, she wrote articles and novels about subjects that ranged from A to Z, some witty, some erotic, even a travel book. With all the places she lived, one wonders when she found time to write between all the packing and unpacking. But she got it done, and lover or hater, she was definitely her own woman.
Thank you again for your answers and the time you dedicated to research. This time the winner is Chang Chuangmeng from China. Congratulations, and a parcel will be on its way to Xi'an first thing on Monday. Of course, I won't leave you without a quiz question. In August, we are looking for the name of a Mexican film actress who was born in 1926 in Prague and died in Mexico City only 29 years later. Please send us her name by the end of August to english@radio.cz, along with your comments and questions. Mailbox will be back again on August the 20th. Until then, take care.
Thank you, Pavla. Pavla Horakova with another edition of our popular show Mailbox. And as she said, August the 20th, so you have a lot to look forward to then. Next, we turn to Czech books. Over the last few weeks, the actress Veronika Hicks has been bringing us extracts from Jaroslava Skleničková's memoirs, If I Had Been a Boy, I Would Have Been Shot. The book tells the moving story of how Jaroslava was sent with the other women from her home village of Ligice to the Ravensbrück concentration camp near Berlin, after the Nazis razed the entire village to the ground in June 1942. The men of the village were shot in cold blood, and nearly all the children were gassed in Poland. But throughout their stay in Ravensbrück, the women had no idea of their fate. As the end of the war drew close, Jaroslava, together with her mother and sister, were marched out of the camp together with hundreds of other women. David Vaughan brings the story up to date.
For several days, the women are made to march under guard and with nothing but wooden clogs on their feet. They cover 40 kilometers a day, On the way, they encounter large groups of civilians retreating as the Eastern Front approaches. At one point, they are attacked by an Allied plane that mistakes them for a German convoy. One day, quite suddenly, all the guards disappear, and the women realize that they are free. But from now on, they must survive on their own, amid the chaos of the German retreat. Veronica Hicks picks up the story.
We try to find out the latest news about the movement of the front and the general situation in our vicinity. This was not easy. German civilians were afraid to speak to us. We did not dare to show ourselves to soldiers. Prisoners and inmates did not know much more than we did. From the sparse news that we gleaned, we judged in the end that the best thing would be to continue in the direction where all the others were going. Supplies we had more or less assured. In our rucksacks were still a few potatoes. Water we used as it came. When hard up, even from pools covered with chickweed. By the end of April, 63 women slept without any blankets, in the woods or in the ditch by the road. In a foreign country and between two fronts. In a village we were passing, we saw people carrying something from a barn. Curious, we went to have a look. There was a large military warehouse, full of thick woolen material. At once, each of us commandeered a piece of material for a blanket, so that we would not feel so cold in the night. We asked for night's lodging, in a solitary farmhouse, but the owners refused to take in former prisoners. The forest was more kindly. At least the branches of its trees in the evening trapped some of the rain. The night was very disturbed. Explosions and increasingly closer gunfire was heard. Before dawn, Miladka gave the signal to start marching. Mama, Mila and I somehow got delayed, and when day broke, we found out that we were on our own. Nothing could be done. We had to continue according to our own devices. After about 2 hours, we made some breakfast in the yard of a deserted farmhouse. In a shed we discovered some farm tools, and I got an idea. From the wheels of a plough and the base of a discarded pram, I made a cart into which we piled our humble belongings. Toward midday we came to the town of Krivitz, where a military lorry bearing an American flag passed us. We rejoiced that from here on we would get a ride home. Close to us, French prisoners were camping, and my sister learned from them that we must go all the way to the American detention camp in Schwerin. I refused to go another 30 kilometres. Mila started to encourage me. Yashi, listen, just a little bit further. We'll sleep somewhere and, you know what, by dinner time we'll reach the Americans. So in the end she persuaded me, and I forced my aching legs for another, hopefully, a final march. On the way we passed a dumping ground of German weapons. Guns thrust into the ground. On them, helmets, discarded bazookas, overturned and burnt-out vehicles. As soon as it started getting dark, we looked for a suitable place to sleep. We liked the nearby forest on the one hand, but on the other, it also gave us a feeling of fear. And just at that moment, a miracle happened. In the ditch, beside the road, Miladka was sitting. The joy at being together again was tremendous. Miladka explained to us where the other women were. At the spot where she was sitting and waiting for us, they had met two Polish prisoners, who told them about a camp of Czech prisoners in the wood, about half an hour away. The group went with them, while Miladka refused, saying, "I have to wait here for the Suchanek girls." How grateful we were later to Miladka, as it is very likely our lives were saved by doing so. We would have certainly gone on to Schwerin the next day, where a lot of prisoners are said to have lost their lives with a bullet from SS men, who who were taking their vengeance before surrendering to the Americans. Apart from those we already knew, we were welcomed in the forest camp by 500 inmates from the Sachsenhausen concentration camp. They treated us with potato pancakes, toasted at the fire, and had built for us temporary tents from conifer branches and canvas. How peacefully we fell asleep to the sound of the lullaby, "Good night, my love, sweet dreams," which one of them played for us on his trumpet. Early next morning, the territory was occupied by the Soviet Red Army. We remained in our camp, and thanks to the radio, a crystal set with earphones, we learned the latest news every day. What is more, we were not short of food. Running freely in the forest were abandoned cattle, and we managed to get hold of potatoes and saucepans in the nearby village. It could be said that we lacked nothing. But among us were those who were old or ill, and after all, it was cold in the forest, and all of us were longing to be back home in Bohemia. We decided to send a delegation to the Americans in Schwerin. Another delegation, led by Antonin Zapotocki, was negotiating with the Russians. The reply from both sides was the same. The railway as well as the bridges are ruined from bombing. We have to wait. The Russians, at least, gave us access to 5 villas in nearby Krivitz, and we moved into them. The houses were quite empty, just a bit of furniture and bedsteads without mattresses. We didn't mind that. We slept on the bare floor, and we were glad that it didn't rain on us. After a short time, they moved us to a small manor house in Weitendorf, where, in the course of just 1 week, we managed to eat up full cellars of potatoes. Once again, lorries came for us and took us to Güstrow. Although we were there only a few days, several of us managed to visit the local cinema. I was most interested in the newsreel. It was in Russian and showed the May Day parade in Moscow and the transport of German prisoners of war, including Marshal Paulus, to detention camps in Siberia. After the newsreel followed an American film, Sun Valley Serenade, starring the figure skater Sonia Henie. Though it was in English with Russian subtitles, it was for me an unforgettable experience. The next day we went to Neubrandenburg, to the Soviet repatriation camp, which was housed in the former SS barracks. Those were the only buildings in the town that had not been damaged at all by bombardment, because the Germans had painted a red cross on the roof to make pilots believe that it was a hospital. Because there were a lot of us, not only was a whole house put at our disposal, but also a kitchen with a canteen. At the end of May, a car came to the camp from Bohemia. A son was looking for his father, who had been imprisoned in Sachsenhausen. He found him with us, and in addition to him, he took 2 more men. One of them was Antonin Zapotocki, who handed a list of our names to the Czechoslovak radio in Prague. It was this way that the steelworks in Kladno learnt about us and sent 2 buses for us. We were going home.
You've been listening to Czech Books and our serialized reading of the memoirs of Jaroslava Skleničková, a survivor of Lidice. And you'll have part 8 next week, so be sure to tune in for that. Now, though, we turn to another edition of From the Archives with David Vaughan.
By 1944, Czechoslovakia's liberation no longer seemed a distant prospect, as Nazi Germany's enemies closed in from east and west. On D-Day, June 6, 1944, over 130,000 Allied troops landed on the beaches of Normandy. This is what the Supreme Commander, Dwight Eisenhower, had to say to radio listeners in occupied Europe later that day.
People of Western Europe, a landing was made this morning on the coast of France by troops of the Allied Expeditionary Force. This landing is part of the concerted United Nations plan for the liberation of Europe, made in conjunction with our great Russian allies. I have this message for all of you. Although the initial assault may not have been made in your own country, the hour of your liberation is approaching.
Czechoslovak participation was initially limited mainly to the air. But a few weeks later, the British-based Czechoslovak 1st Armoured Brigade was deployed. Its mission, to besiege the German-held French port of Dunkirk. It was to the Czechoslovak Brigade that the German garrison was eventually to surrender, right at the end of the war, in May 1945.
This is a Czechoslovak government dispatch, recorded at Dunkirk on 21st January, describing a visit of Red Army men.
In January 1945, the Czech language section of the BBC came to visit the Czechoslovak troops outside Dunkirk, where they had been joined by over 800 Red Army men. The Soviet commander opened proceedings with a greeting in Russian. His men were Soviet soldiers who had escaped from German prisoner and labor camps in Holland and Belgium and had managed to survive in hiding until they were liberated. Now they were getting ready to go home, and the Czechoslovak troops in France wanted to thank them for the Red Army's victories on the Eastern Front. As we can hear, the celebrations were loud and enthusiastic. Nearly 2,000 miles to the east, the Nazi Empire was also shrinking fast. In Slovakia, the town of Banská Bystrica became the focus of the Slovak national uprising that broke out at the end of August 1944, when Slovaks rebelled against the Nazis. Radio played a role in rallying Slovaks to join the rebellion. Here the speaker is appealing to citizens and army reservists. At the same time, the Red Army, including over 16,000 Czechoslovak troops, was approaching from the north and east. Soviet radio, through the voice of its legendary broadcaster Yuri Levitan, informed of the Red Army's advances as troops penetrated Czechoslovak territory. But the Red Army offensive was to meet far tougher German resistance than had been expected, and what came to be known as the Dukla Preshov operation was to prove one of the bloodiest in the history of the Eastern Front. In the two-month campaign, 21,000 Soviet troops lost their lives, along with nearly 2,000 Czechoslovak soldiers.
David Vaughan's From the Archives brings us to the end of our weekend program here at Radio Prague. We want to thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, as always, you can comment on anything you've heard in our show by writing to english@radio.cz. Also, if you'd like more news from the Czech Republic, be sure to visit us on the web. The address is www.radio.cz. For now, though, it's bye-bye. Thank you.
vous écoutez Radio Prague.